On this episode of the ORP podcast, Autism. The CDC reports that as of 2014, 1 in 68 U.S. children has an autism spectrum disorder. That's an estimated 1 million children living with autism, and 1 million families navigating a life they never imagined. The autism spectrum covers varying degrees of disability, and at the end of that spectrum are kids who are unfortunately too violent and volatile to live a normal family life. This episode visits two mothers, Amy Mentz and Bridget Montillo, whose families were thrown onto the path of navigating extreme autism without warning.
It literally went like a switch went off. Like one minute he was talking, his first word was flower, I distinctly remember Aww. That. And then literally about 18 months exactly, a light went off. I remember him playing with a toy in a beauty shop. And I was trying to get him to play with this toy that was like, he was looking off to the side, not looking at the toy. And I remember being at a local fair or something and seeing other kids the same age as my son who were like clinging to their parents. And Andrew's just wandering off, you know, could care less that we were around or anywhere. You know, he didn't pay any attention to us in any way, shape, or form at that point. He could have just wandered away and not looked back, you know. When we had Andrew diagnosed, nobody wanted to say that A word. It was too scary for anyone to say autism, even though I think a lot of people had already thought it. Nobody really wanted to say the words to us.
Again, that was Amy Mentz, and before her, Bridget Montillo. These phone interviews were conducted by Roundtable Company's executive editor, Katie Gutierrez, who you'll also hear on the line, for research on ORP projects. The struggles faced by families of autistic children are immense and begin well before a diagnosis is even reached. Amy and Bridget share their stories in hopes of making the journey easier for anyone else in their difficult situation. Here's Amy again.
If I played with him a way that he really loved, and then he would engage with me more. Like, I knew he loved tickles. I knew he loved chase games. And so when I showed him those things, he could respond. So I knew exactly what he liked to do and how to do that, those things that he enjoyed. And so if someone else came in and tried to do those things or things on the floor with him, he wouldn't respond.
And here's Bridget.
When I went to my pediatrician, of course, they had said, he's a boy. You know, he'll talk later. Don't compare him to his daughter, his sister, right. Because they're two different. Girls talk quicker. Boys move faster. He was actually very physical early on. My daughter was very verbal early on. So that was my reference. I'm like, oh, they're professionals. They would know. Mm-hmm. My first instinct was first worry. Then second one was, no, professional said it's fine.
You know, it's funny how strong denial is because me as the mom, I just would not believe that it could be something as severe as autism. We went through the whole, maybe he's got hearing problems, and they all came back that he could hear fine. And I knew he could because he, you know, we could call his name and he wouldn't respond, but he'd hear Barney from the other end of the house and he'd come running. So I knew he could hear, but we went through that thinking, maybe. But when that came back that he could hear, I still couldn't admit to myself that it would be something as traumatic as autism. I just couldn't believe it because I would tell people, look at him, he's so cute. He can do this, he can do this. And I would make sure that everybody saw him doing something that looked pretty normal. I think my husband even knew ahead of before I did that there was something going on, and I just couldn't come to terms with that there was something wrong with my baby. You know, nobody can tell me that.
Everyone in our family was trying to avoid the whole autism word for fear that he would be labeled, and nobody knew what services were available to him through the schools at the time. Just he would drop to the floor. He would yell instead of talk because he'd just scream. Mm-hmm. He'd hit, he'd bite, he did all those fun things. We was learning as we went. Everybody was getting educated as we went. After getting over the meltdown or the freaking out of that, this is the end all be all, you know, it actually was empowering because I actually pulled every single book I could possibly find about autism that I could find. Mm-hmm. And I just got on it, basically. Every therapy I could find, everything I can sink my teeth into, we did. I mean, our journey began right then. I was constantly, by the way, constantly from this day on fighting with the school system. But
it was about, I wrote to them that I had more minutes out in private therapy than he actually was getting in school.
So he'd been doing therapy probably about 4 years, and that all started to really come out, like the obsessive compulsive and the aggressive and the self-injurious behaviors. He got into all these obsessive compulsive patterns that were really, you know, when I look back now, I think, how did we live with this stuff? Like, he couldn't have doors closed. Oh, he put his head through the windows. The first time he did it, you know, luckily he never got hurt. I don't know how this happened, but he hit his head to the window, and the first time it broke, he liked to watch the glass fall. So it got to be like a reinforcing thing to do it. So once he did it once, every window in the house was open to that experience. It was scary for me because I had to watch him every second and make sure that he wasn't putting his head to the window. We broke probably six windows, two mirrors, and the window in the car, if you can imagine that, with his head.
If working to maintain sanity at home wasn't enough, families frequently find themselves clashing with their autistic child's school and pediatrician as to what is best for the child. Children are often carelessly medicated, asked to leave school, or often both, as no one knows how to deal with the child's aggressive behavior. Bridget.
My pediatrician was actually, believe it or not, supposedly a specialist in developmental disorders. He basically took out his prescription pad, and I didn't say basically, this is exactly what happened. He took out his prescription pad and said, "What would you like?"
Oh my gosh.
And I made a joke. I go, "For me or for my son?" And he looks at me like, poor lady, what do you want me to give him? I said, "I don't know. I'm coming to you. You're the professional.
Right.
What do you do?" So he tried him on the Ritalin.
I had my psychiatrist at one point, when Andrew was having a rough time, had told me that, you know, if worse comes to worse, there's Oconomowoc, and it's a good place. And she said, it's the only place I would put my child in this state.
Oh, wow.
And so it was... you know, these things had come up in the past. I mean, you think about it, you just don't think you're ever going to have to do it, but it was in the back of my head. So well, we didn't know it was going to be a matter of waiting until he was really, really at that point.
I went to expert, but long story short, he ended up getting, the school couldn't handle him anymore because he was so big and strong. Now he is like 5'11", he's 240 pounds. He was huge. At home, he was just at home, and I was having to handle him, and I couldn't handle him. It was terrifying to think about it. That's the only time I get emotional, because it was horrific. But he beat the hell out of us. I went to I'm crying and begging anybody I could find to help me, and no one could help me. We actually had to have him hospitalized at one point because he was so out of control. It took 6 police officers and 3 sedations to finally get him strapped down to get him out of the house. And that's how he ended up in Oconomowoc, ultimately.
After years of battling healthcare and education professionals and navigating their son's violent outbursts, each family came to a breaking point. It's not something that any parent wants to admit, that they're unable to provide the stability and care that their child needs.
He needs to have that kind of stability. He needs 24/7 care. And I just don't think anybody in a private home could handle that kind of 24/7 care without really. And it took me a while to get to that point, but I believe it now. It was hard because I knew that he was thinking he was going home, and we were taking him somewhere else, and that was so hard for me. I just sat in the back seat with him. I hugged him, kissed him the whole way down there, and I was just like, "It's going to be okay, buddy," you know, and he didn't know.
Yeah.
And so then we get to this different location and walk in, and he just starts crying right away, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. So hard.
It was.
And I'm like, what are we doing? Maybe we should take him home. Or like, David had to remind me, you know, Amy, we got to see how this goes. Give him the chance. And honestly, it didn't take him too long to adjust.
Over the years, as far as how it's turned our family upside down, we've all just basically come to terms with the fact that this is our lot in life.
Mm-hmm.
And, we try really hard to laugh about it as much as we can. And it's really actually molded us into the people, and obviously my daughter too, into the people we are. I know law. I know a lot about therapies. I know a lot about a lot of things, and yet I didn't go to any school. And so in that sense, it was really interesting to me that, you know, how life leads you down a path and how you've been handed something and how it changes you. And you didn't even know it changed you.
You have to have a little faith and know that, say a prayer and just say, okay, I've got to let go here and know that I can't have total control of this child. It was one of the biggest things I had to overcome was your child has a future. Your child has a plan for his life. Andrew's got a plan, and you got to let him go and go on his journey. You cannot control his life, even though he's disabled. He's got a journey just like we all do. I can't control every step he makes.
Again, that was Amy Mentz and Bridget Montillo with Katie Gutierrez. For more information on autism or Oconomowoc, visit ORP.com. For Roundtable Companies, I'm Heather Haynes.